Welcome back to InvincibleCast, probably the greatest podcast about the Amazon original series Invincible. My name is James.
I'm Ralph.
And today we're talking about season one, episode six. You look kind of dead.
Yeah.
I love these episode titles. They are just like, they're lines of dialogue that aren't in anything. But right. They're just real natural. They're great.
Right. Who is, like, is there a character off screen monitoring all the activity that's saying this stuff?
I feel like this would have been Eve when she's like just as she sees Mark,
right,
when she goes to the hospital or something.
Oh my god. Okay, so I took two notes.
Cool.
Because I was like, I just want to watch the show and then hopefully remember enough to discuss it with you. If I'm lucky, I'll do a second viewing and then just take all the notes. But this time, during my initial watch, I had to take two notes, and the first one involves Eve. And did you or did you not think of Kashyyyk when she built her house?
Exactly what I was thinking. I've got it written in my notes. I've got Eve's treehouse looks dope. I'm sure Wookiees would love it.
Right. It literally looks like the holiday special version.
Yeah.
Of that Ralph McQuarrie painting.
Yeah. It's great. I love it.
I was like, if I were to live anywhere.
Because like, she did live in a treehouse in the comics. Like she built herself a treehouse like out in Africa somewhere. But like I'm sure it didn't look like that. That's a cool treehouse.
Yeah, if you could build a house literally anywhere and any style, like, I mean, even if you get sick of it, do something somewhere else.
And exactly. Yeah. With her power, she can just change up anything at any point. So.
Did her power seem stronger than in the book?
I don't know. I feel like it was, I mean, she basically said it in this episode, and she's mentioned it before, and I think she did throughout the comic. She's like, why am I fighting people with this? Like, I could do so much more with my power. It's like she's got this potential, but because superheroes are a thing in this world, she's just sort of fallen into that by default, whereas she knows, and she is now doing so much more. Like, we see a montage of her, and she's like cleaning up the planet. She's doing really good stuff.
Right. I like the farmers waving at her.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the farmers waving at her made me feel like she's been doing this for a little bit and they've heard about it. Like, if you're struggling, like as a farmer and someone just comes by and helps your crop, you'd be like, you'd have like tears. You'd be like, oh my gosh, thank you. But they're just standing there waving as she goes by. Like it's now old hat.
Yeah, it's not like it's expected, but it's appreciated, and they're not surprised by it. Maybe she'd just done the whole area.
Yeah.
She's just doing a tour, country by country. We're jumping ahead there a bit, though. We get quite a bit of college. We get Upstate University this episode.
Right, and this is something I remember from the book, because when I reread it, this is the very the first storyline with the human bombs a little bit, taking kids from the school.
This is directly from the books, with D.A. Sinclair creating Reanimen, but it's not the first one. I think this is when they go to visit I think it's just after they start college, because they're not at high school for very long in the books.
Right. But does it feel combined? Was the Reanimen taken from the college in the comics?
Oh. Yeah. That was all college stuff. I think it was one of those things that the bombs and the Reanimen thing in the book felt very similar.
Right.
So which is, I think, why they've cut the bomb stuff from the show completely, because they're like, we've got the Reanimen, like, they're more of a recurring thing.
Right. Yeah, because I was wondering about that, because I'm like, oh, this feels like the bomb storyline, which I just read before watching the series, because I read the first three trades.
How the book opens, isn't it?
Yeah. And so I thought they were taking that storyline and putting it here. I didn't realize, I completely forgot that the Reanimen was so similar to the bombs.
Yeah, it really
Maybe
is.
Kirkman wanted a second shot at it.
I think it's what it feels like. We said it about the show, how he's being able to sort of edit himself and go, right, this worked, this didn't, let me tweak this and change this. I feel like he was doing that even with the books. Right. And the Reanimen were like that. To instead of just strapping a bomb vest to some high school kids and blowing up shopping malls, which is what the first sort of villain in the book does, we've got D.A. Sinclair, this complete douchebag like student
right
who's there. Like, he doesn't need to be there. He always seemed like he was out of place because it's like, yeah, this is a good school, but he's so above everyone else.
Right.
So he's taking people and quote unquote bettering them.
His voice, Ezra Miller.
Yes.
Who I didn't recognize. Perfect. I didn't recognize. No, I didn't. And was like, oh my gosh, that's the perfect voice for this character.
I mean, we see him in Shadows. Like, we know who he is right. as book readers. But when we first see him in Shadows, and like, that is so spot on for the character design.
Yeah, the casting on this show is amazing.
It's so good. And, like, yeah. Again, people like Ezra Miller who, like, I didn't watch Justice League, but, like, I know that he is Flash in the Justice League
right.
movie and stuff. So that's what I think he's most famous for at the moment still.
Probably, and then I think he's in the, he pops up in the, what is it, Fantastic Beasts?
Is he from those as well, yeah.
Yeah, he plays kind of a creepy weirdo in that.
I mean, he's got the voice for it.
Right, it's great, it's great. Yeah, I had to look up D.A. Sinclair while I was watching the episode. I'm like, I know this guy. Mm. And then he kind of has a vibe of, he looks sort of similar to Cecil. And I'm like, wait, who is this guy? Is he related to Cecil? No, not really. It's the slick back hair.
He's like a, it's almost like you can imagine it being
anti-Cecil
when he was younger sort right. of thing. Yeah.
Right.
It is interesting with D.A., like, we see when he does get beaten eventually at the end of the episode. I love that William had a hand in that. William like, took him down like first and was pounding on him. Like, he was going to town, which I thought was really good. It gave him some agency. And then I like that they kept him alive. You know, he is a villain who, I mean, right. Mark, I think it's Mark who asks Cecil, is like, what are you going to do with him? And he's like, oh, you know, like, lock him up, throw away the key, the standard sort of thing.
Right.
But then they're interested in that tech. Like, Cecil is, yeah. he's a good guy, but he works, he operates in shades of gray. Like, he appreciates good tech when he can find it.
Right. He'll do anything to gain an advantage.
Yes. That's a great.
He has a lot of responsibility. And the fact that nobody knows he really exists, like, sort of outside the community. You know, he kind of works in dark ways.
Yeah.
But that's what's great about him, because even in a couple episodes ago where he was doing, like, incantations to get rid of Damien Darkblood, like, he'll, it doesn't matter. He'll use anything to his advantage. You know, if it works, it works.
Yeah.
You know?
So, I mean, now he's got the technology. He's got, like, prototypes, essentially, of this reanimate technology, and he's got right. the creator of it at his disposal. So, I mean, I don't think that Sinclair would be particularly, like, helpful, but, right. you know, if he was cut a deal or something, like, you never know, yeah. it could come back up. I'm sure it could come back up.
Oh, so much stuff could come back up.
That, I mean, they are just laying so much groundwork. It's, right. it's great storytelling.
At this point, I feel like either Kirkman knew ahead of time that he's going to have at least another season, or yeah. he's just putting this stuff in really, really with hoping.
Yeah. yeah.
You don't want to,
so. Like, operate on the assumption that you do. And then if you don't, leave them wanting more sort of thing.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very exciting.
It works really well. The stuff that I'm really enjoying is the stuff that I have no idea what to expect with. And that's everything with Nolan at this point.
I am.
Everything with Nolan and Debbie, I love it.
It's like, I don't, when I watch stuff, I tend not to laugh or comment or talk. I just sit there and watch stuff. Mm-hmm. This show has me talking more out loud than like any other show. This relationship with Nolan and Debbie is so nerve-wracking to me.
Yeah.
Because in the book, she doesn't really know about the Guardians. I don't think she suspects. Definitely not to this level where she's like a detective.
No.
And
she's, I mean, we said it in our preview episode. She's kind of a nothing character until right. everything goes down with Nolan.
Right.
Which happens later. But, like, it's, they've given her so much more to do
Yeah.
At this point, it works.
It's giving me anxiety.
Yeah.
Like, it's like stressful. Her, it shows how powerful she is. How she's like, we all know that he could just crush her head.
Yeah, like, snap his fingers she'd be gone. She is again and again and again said she's just a normal human, like with nothing, no powers or anything.
But her to stand up to him.
Yeah.
The thing is, she knows him personally. They've been together, 20 years or so. She'll know how to get under his skin from the mental side of things. And I think he knows that. Like, he crushes the wine because he's frustrated.
Yeah.
But then he just has to sit there. He has to sit there and deal with it because he knows. He knows kind of, like, you know.
She is right.
The struggle, it's hard to talk about the struggle, his struggle, and what he's going through without sort of...
giving too much away.
Yeah, giving too much away from the comics. Which we're all assuming the show is leading to what happens in the comics. But
I mean, yeah, for as much as it's diverging, like, there are key moments that they can't avoid.
There's a line in this episode that made me believe that that's where we're heading, where Nolan is talking to Art Rosenbaum.
Yes.
And says something to the effect of, you know, you believe you have all the time in the world until it like sneaks up on you.
Mm.
There's something to that effect, and
there's a ticking clock.
There's a ticking clock, and Nolan knows it, but nobody else does, and he can't talk about it.
And that's really interesting.
So there's something about him where he's like, there's a reason he took out the Guardians. There's a reason he's acting the way he is. And he can't tell anybody. And that shot of him just sitting in the chair, just thinking, like, that moment, I think, is like perfect for Nolan, because he's on Earth because he fell in love with Debbie.
Yeah.
That's why he's on Earth.
That's not why he's living his alter ego life, essentially. Yeah. Why he is not, being Nolan Grace.
That's not why he came to Earth. No. He came to Earth to be, you know, this protector. So now you have him at odds, you know, he's wrestling in his brain between his
family
life.
Definitely. I think the conflict is within him.
And it's running a parallel with Mark. Mark is trying to almost like make superheroing sort of take a back seat to his regular life. He looks at the college poster and it says something, it talks about the future. And his future, he wants his future to be a normal life at college with Amber.
Yeah.
But he can't just stand by and let people get hurt by things that only he can, you know, take care of.
Well, we see it in that first Reanimate attack, don't we? Where, right. His instinct is, like, he clenches his fist. He's ready to go and help the two people who are getting attacked.
Right.
But it's Amber who's like, Mark, get over here, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And he does. Until it's William who's in danger.
Right.
And then he's gone and he's saving his best friend.
So we've had 20 years of Nolan figuring out how to juggle his family life with the superhero life, but his superhero life, he doesn't realize, is sort of taking over, and he's letting Debbie slip away, and he's made some bad decisions.
The lines are blurring, especially when Mark comes into play. Like,
right.
That's when lines are starting to blur. Like, he can't separate the two.
Right. I feel like once this season's over, we're going to have to do like an episode 9 just to kind of go over some of this stuff. Talk about like the foreshadowing that we've kind of skated around during the show, but the seeing the parallels between these two characters and what they're going through, where Mark seems to be doing everything for good and Nolan seems to be doing everything for evil, but it's really what Kirkman and company have done with Debbie in this series has been phenomenal. Like, it's brought so much more depth to her character. It's made her a stronger character. It also makes her character feel more vulnerable. Sorry. Yes. It's early. But because, yeah, with her being kind of unaware in the comic books of what Nolan's been up to, you just, it's ignorance is bliss. And she's kind of just been living her life like normal. The family still comes home and eats dinner. But with
she
this,
she is just
a
housewife. At this point in the comic, all she does is makes dinner and washes costumes. And what's, like, she doesn't even have the job that she has in the show.
What's great about this, too, is like she's lived with the superhero for 20 years and she knows his day-to-day routine to the point where something's off. You know when something's off. I've been with my wife for 22 years now. You know when stuff is off. You really do. It's a long time to get to know somebody. And
it doesn't
need
to be spoken. It's like, it's just there. Yeah.
Right. So, red flags, you know, they happen. But, you know, this is, you know, my wife can't kill me. just the whole, like, the notion of... And I think at the time when I watched episode one and we saw Nolan take out the Guardians of the Globe, I was like, oh man, this is too soon. You know, this doesn't happen so quickly in the books, but now having that information in your back pocket really adds tension to the marriage relationship and with Art's relationship. That scene was intense.
Yeah, so Art and Debbie's relationship grows later in the books. Like, she goes into a deep, 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 deep depression.
Right.
And that's kind of when her character starts getting interesting. It sounds harsh to say that when she's depressed, she's more interesting. But they start giving her more to do. And Art plays into that. He's a friend to her. So seeing that they have a friendship now already, like before all of that, is great. It helps, and like, he is Nolan's friend. He doesn't want to do any of this stuff, but he's found this stuff out. He's not going to deny it. Like, it's right there. The facts are laid out in front of him, and he's scared shitless about what that means.
Right.
Because he knows.
Like, everybody knows that they know, but they're not saying it.
Yeah. Like, and
Nolan knows. Nolan, Debbie knows.
And Nolan knows that Art knows, and
it's a lot. But Debbie doesn't know.
It feels like that scene in Heat, like the scene between De Niro and Pacino in the cafeteria in Heat, where like they're just staring at each other. It's like, are you going to do this? Are you going to do this? Well, I'm going to have to take you down, kind of thing. And it's like, it's the subtle threatening when he's like popping the cap off the beer,
right? And the what cracks me up is it's some of the most intense drama I've seen on television in a long time without them, you know, kind of telling the audience, like, you know, babying us. Like, we've been watching the characters. We know what this scene is and we know it's intense and it's a fucking cartoon.
Yeah. Right.
Like, how are they pulling this off? I don't get it. It's the brightest, most colorful cartoon ever. The fight with the reanimate in the plaza at the university, it's so bright and vibrant. It looks like a Justice League cartoon.
Yeah.
And everything about this show is just filled with drama. And there's not even like that much comedy, but it still feels has that like,
there are
feeling
moments
to
that
it.
Are funny though, like that even when they're dark, funny. Like when that reanimate impales himself in the plaza, it's like, it's dark because you know that that's the guy, that's Justin Roiland from the start of the episode,
right?
And you're like, oh shit, he's in there. And I mean, that's why he kills himself, because he's in so much pain,
right?
But the way he does it, it's funny.
Right.
Like,
when I saw
it,
my first
out
reaction
of, like, shock kind of thing.
Right, when it happened, because you're sitting, because the way you normally have a superhero book is the good guys fight the bad guys, the good guys win, sometimes the bad guys win. In this one, it's like a draw, and like, you don't really see a lot of major villains like just sort of kill themself.
Yeah.
But
and
then,
not without, like, trying to take out hundreds of other people, like, for nefarious means.
Like, you don't see that on TV.
No, with anything. It's not just a superhero thing. You just generally don't see it.
But it adds... What's great about that moment, too, is it adds stakes for when Rick becomes a reanimate. And you're like, oh, he's fucked now. Like, even
there's no way out of this.
Even if he gets out of it, is he still going to want to kill himself? Mm. You know? And the horror on his face when the mask gets removed and the chip gets removed from the back of the head, or even when he's just before that moment, when he's looking at Will,
start to wake up. Yeah.
And the tears are coming down and Sinclair's like, oh, you're such a freaking wuss. Like, yeah. Like, 'cause he wants alpha males.
Yeah.
And
so weak.
And an alpha male wouldn't cry.
That's right.
But just that moment where you're just like, oh my God, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And you're like, because with that reanimate killing himself at the beginning, you're like, this must be the same thing that's going through Rick's head.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it's the programming, and, isn't it? I mean, he said, like, we see a bit of his brain in the jar. Like, he took out his emotional sort of center of his brain. It was like, yeah. So
just the storytelling is amazing. It's so good.
I was talking to some people this week about the show because they've been catching up, and like a couple of them have said, like, yeah, I love the show, it's really good, but I'm not into the animation style. It feels kind of flat and stilted, and it's something that I think we mentioned in the first episode.
Right.
But I can see what they're saying, and it is sort of lending itself to a comic book adapted to screen.
Right.
But I really feel that it's intentional, and it's because when he's out of superhero stuff, when he's just Mark Grayson, kid going to school and visiting colleges, it's designed to feel slower, more mundane, more plodding.
Right.
So that when he's in the suit, when we see any superhero stuff, or there's a big fight, the dynamicism of it all sort of comes out, and it all just feels a lot more energetic.
So, okay, let me... This is, I don't know.
Hit us with the animation knowledge, Ralph.
Walt Disney didn't like Xerox.
Okay.
So there's a process where there's ink and paint. So what happens is the animators draw with pencil, and then someone cleans up the pencil lines, lays down the animation cell, paints nice, thin lines to make it look very clean, and then they paint it and then do that. There's a process called Xerox where they put the animation cells like in a Xerox machine.
Yeah.
And then mess with the, adjust the contrast.
Okay.
So the Xerox just pops out these animation cells with the black lines pretty good, but they still have the pencil sketches kind of looking like that. So the first one they did this with was 101 Dalmatians. So if you look at the pencil line, or if you look at the drawings, you'll see black lines kind of appear across the eyes or stuff. That's all from the original pencil work. But
sketch lines.
Right.
Yeah.
It was a way to cut cost instead of having people hand paint each cell.
Yeah, right.
It's so cool. So what they did was, since the animation looks kind of loose and kind of weird, because they had to animate hundreds of dogs.
Yeah.
So they're like, we can't have people hand inking these
every cell, every panel. Yeah.
So what they did was, let's make the backgrounds look loose as well. So they did sort of a sketchy watercolor thing. So it looks like it's part of the design.
Yeah. So it's just the aesthetic, like, of that.
Right. But it was the whole reason to do it was for cost cutting. With Invincible, I feel like this animation isn't as smooth and fluid as, you know, other animation, but I think it's a cost cutting thing, and I think they're using it to their advantage. When you see Invincible fly, a lot of times you would see a character fly, and when he turns, the animators will have him in one pose, like, let's say, facing the camera, and then doing a barrel roll to do a dive in the next frame, and the animators will send that out to a group of people called in-betweeners. and the in-betweeners fill in those gaps with more drawings to make it look more smooth. So they might be foregoing the in-betweener stage to keep costs down. But then also what it does is it lets the animators know, like, you have to hit very powerful poses every single time, because there's going to be nothing in between to sort of transition you into the shot. So I feel like it's a cost cutting thing, but at the same time, it has a stylized look. It's really forcing the animators to make like comic books.
Yeah, exactly. A comic book page where you're going from, like, I don't know, maybe 6, 8, 9 panels on a page.
Right.
And instead of, you're not going to have those in betweening bits.
Right. And so I feel like it works. I feel like, I guarantee you that anyone who's read the comic book loves the way this is animated.
Yeah.
And people who aren't super fond of the animation probably haven't read the comic book.
And have probably watched a lot of animation and know all the techniques and can see that it is a cost-cutting thing.
And the it's kind of something that you see in anime as well.
Yeah. Where it's churning out so much.
It's poses. It's all about poses. Static shots with dynamic backgrounds. There's some of that in this too. This show definitely feels more like anime, but drawn in the style of Cory Walker and Ryan Ottley. And the animation becomes really smooth when it comes to blood and gore. So it's also when that stuff happens, it has more of an impact because it has a more realistic movement.
It hits harder.
Right. So all of this stuff, I'm sure, was thought out, either whether it's ways to just do cost cutting or ways to do it to make it visually interesting. But I feel like I like how this is going. I like it the works. Way it and works. And
if this is the budget that they have to keep to keep the show going, I'm fine with it. I have no problem with it whatsoever.
Right.
It works. It works for me.
And then speaking of the animation, Mark's flying is becoming better.
Yes.
And as I love he sort of has been doing these tumbles into different poses, like into like to change direction, he'll do like a backflip in mid flight.
He's sort of attacking every enemies from all sides, isn't he? He's like
And great. the first couple episodes you could tell he was shaky. Like, if he would tumble, it meant he was out of control, and he was really like struggling to get flying downright. And
now you look at the fight with Doc Seismic compared to the fight with the Reanimen in this episode. Right. Like, he's improved so much more.
Yeah,
and it's been 3-4 months.
Right.
Just good stuff. It's very good.
Yeah, it's. I'd be interested to see if your friends pick up the book.
I know one of them's already got the compendium from Comixology and is reading it and is into it. One of the others has already read the book, but not for years. Watched a lot of animation though, so could be that.
Right. Right. It's hard. It's tough because, like, nowadays everything seems to be CG.
Yeah.
Like, even like back in 2011, Green Lantern, the animated series, did the Bruce Timm style in 3D animation, and then they did a Batman, and then it wasn't really, I think it was like Young Justice around the same time, we're still doing 2D animation. Mm. And I feel like this stuff is kind of
Young Justice holds up better.
Yeah, it totally does. Thank God, like, because Green Lantern, the storytelling is so good on that show. Mm-hmm. Like, the animation doesn't really matter, but it is definitely 11-year-old animation.
It's the same with the two Avatar shows. Like, all of Last Airbender was 2D animation, and then in Legend of Korra they started doing some 3D elements.
Mm-hmm.
It was still like a mostly 2D animated show, but there was a lot more 3D elements as it went on into like the third and fourth seasons, and they don't look good. They really don't look good.
Right.
When you go back to it now, whereas you look at the other show, which finished like well over 10 years ago now, and it's excellent.
Do you feel like that Invincible's on par animation wise with Young Justice.
Oh, it's been so long since I've seen Young Justice.
I feel like they have a similar vibe.
Yeah,
I feel like Young Justice versions.
The same audience.
Yeah, but I feel like the Young Justice characters would fit in this art style a little bit.
Yeah, if you just drop them in, sort of thing. Yeah.
God, I've been fucking loving this show. Like just watching Mark fight in the sewers and fight in the University Plaza. Just looked so good.
Can we talk about the sewers for a sec? Because when William, like, we get the dynamic and the sort of Mark is debating whether he needs to go and be a hero and save Rick or, like, look for Rick or go and save his relationship that he's keeps on screwing up. And he goes to save Amber. But William goes out looking for Rick. Don't climb into a sewer, dude. Like, what are you doing? If you've never seen any movie.
This episode, my wife said, everyone's making the worst decisions. Amber's making the worst decisions. Uh-huh. Mark's making the worst decisions.
Eve is the only one who is.
Yeah, Eve's the only one. Nolan.
She stands up to her dad and is like, I'm out. I'm going to go fix the world.
But
yeah, Nolan, everyone is.
But William, like, I guess what? He tried. He but loves.
We know how smitten he is with Rick, and like,
so
he's just desperate to find
him. A sewer dude.
Yeah, right. You're not.
That's when
it.
You call Mark again and say, "Hey, listen, I found a shoe. It's near this open sewer."
Not when you're in the sewer with clearly no signal.
But I mean, it shows. It adds more to William than the comics by showing some sort of bravery, showing him, you know, how much he loves Rick.
Yeah.
I mean, to the point where I'm like, now I love Rick. I really want this to happen.
Like, they seem so cute together. It's like they're great, and they've got a history and everything already. It's like they've done the backstory off screen, which is nice.
Right.
It's good.
Right.
I liked all of that stuff. I thought Rick just came across as just such a nice guy. He was just trying really hard to like, he's got some new friends. He's trying to show them around. He's
mutual.
An ambassador.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He loves Will. And then the setup to that finale, like it's one of those things where it's like you gotta, like the way they've been juggling these storylines, it just works. Like I'm surprised that this is episode 6. Mm. We only have 2 more episodes.
Yeah.
But they've packed so much into these 6 where I'm like, man, it doesn't feel like rushed. I love the 45-minute format.
It works so well.
There's one thing I wanted to mention with Green Lantern, the animated series, that is driving me nuts with this series. I cannot shake the voice of the Mahler twins because Kevin Michael Richardson, I've heard him in tons of stuff. He does so many amazing voices, but his Mahler twins is so close to his Kilowog. I cannot shake it. I cannot shake it. It's the one voice I'm totally used to. Steven Yeun, I'm used to Sandra Oh and everybody else, even Nolan. Now, J. Keith Simmons is totally Nolan for me, but the Mahler twins, maybe they just don't show up enough, but I love Green Lantern, the animated series, so many times. I've probably watched it through from beginning to end at least. It's been around for 10 years. Wow. I'd say at least 20 times through the series.
Yeah, that's episodes. The same with me and Avatar. Like it's
I need to watch Avatar.
You really do.
I've never seen, and it's from one of the creators of
Green
Lantern, the animated series.
One of the producers on the all of it. It's great.
I can't shake the Kilowog voice. I'm trying so hard, but
I'm just
weird.
Scanning through Kevin Michael Richardson's credits here, and like, the dude is prevalent. Like, he is in everything.
And even when I know it's his voice, it never sounds like him. My first real exposure was Kilowog. That's when I first took note of his name. Because he was Kilowog when the Green Lantern movie came out in 2011. They released a PlayStation game. A Green Lantern PlayStation game. And he was the voice of Kilowog in that.
Cool.
And the Gray DeLee's, Gray Griffin, I think now. She voiced the Ring in the Green Lantern video game, and then voiced Aya in the Green Lantern series. She's Monster Girl.
Yeah.
But I don't hear her in Monster Girl. So it's like, so just that, just the Kilowog-ness of the Mahler twins. I mean, he's probably got like hundreds and hundreds of credits. Like, it just happens to be the two shows I love. He picked the similar voices, but I'll get over it. I get over it. Let's talk about them. The robot.
Yes, Mahler twins. Let's talk about the Mahler twins first, because that's the sort of the end of the episode. The
I just remembered that. Like, yeah. Ooh, and I'm super excited.
Here it is. It's what we've been talking about for the last few weeks, sort of in backhanded terms. They are digging up the immortal.
Right. Oh my god! But this plays out differently in the comics. The Mahler twins just flat out dig up Immortal. They're like,
yeah, his, to dig up his Immortal. Grave is hidden. Like,
but he's extends the John Hamm storyline.
Yeah,
because his stepson is the one helping dig this up, right? And I got shades of Justice League in this, because in Justice League the film, Cyborg and Flash played by Ezra Miller, dig up the grave of Clark Kent.
Oh, okay.
So, but I mean, obviously, digging up Immortal came before this, before yeah. Justice League. Dude, just hearing them talk about Immortal is getting me excited.
And the drinking from his skull, and then they'll become immortal and everything. It's
I can't even. Like, I love Immortal so much.
It's great. And like, do you think that we're gonna get that next week, or do you think they're saving that for the finale?
Well, here's the thing. Cecil and his cleanup crew took Immortal's head and put it on that box and sealed it. So, is it just Immortal's body in there? Would they just take his head?
So, okay, we know that the Mahler twins are all about cloning as well. So even if they've got the body, could they clone another head? Could they clone another immortal with the full head and everything?
Well,
and
we know they're working for a robot, and since he's immortal, he could prolong life. So I'm kind of hoping they just find the body and use that blood to help Monster Girl's infliction of de-aging.
And then somewhere in like the depths of the Pentagon, like Immortal's head like just wakes up in a box somewhere, and he's like, I need to get back to my body.
listen
I'm into that.
Everybody, you have to know by now, Immortal's not done. We're not done with Immortal.
Immortal's gonna be in this show.
Will Mark fight or the Mahler twins fight a headless immortal body?
That'd be amazing. The body breaks
what
out.
What do you even punch? What do you try to punch at? Just a chest, I guess.
It's just all just going to be torso shots, yeah.
Oh my god. I don't want to spoil it, because I'm really hoping for that immortal backstory.
I think we'll get it.
It is one of my favorite things in comics.
When we find out, like, I think we'll get some more of it. I mean, we might even get that stuff next week. When, like, I think next week
we'll have two episodes
back together. Yeah, I think we'll be getting it like cut back and forth with them putting him back together next week, and then he'll be involved in a confrontation in the finale, maybe at the start of the finale.
He can okay, this is what I'm thinking right now. So we'll have the cold open be the Mahler twins with Immortal and the body. The body.
Yeah.
The body moves. And they can't believe, man, he's really in. And then the Invincible title pops up.
Yep.
Drenched
yep.
in blood. Then we get Mark telling Amber in the final episode, in episode 8, he tells her, maybe at the very, 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 very end, he tells her, Invincible, covered in blood, credits.
Yeah.
And then a post-credit sequence with, I don't know, Immortal.
Some
fully made. I don't know, but I want to say I'm hoping the cold open is the Mahler twins. I don't see them doing another sort of
comedy beat,
weird kind of side story setting up something else like the Mummy.
Mummy, like, I mean, they've got what, basically two TV hours worth right. of episodes left. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot to do. They've got through so much, but now to get from where we are to where we assume it's gonna wrap up this season,
right?
They've got some stuff to do if they're gonna continue to go down the road that they are.
Okay, so if they end this season on a cliffhanger, which we've been teasing about Nolan, they have to do season two.
Yeah, I think
if that's the cliffhanger, it's gonna be a long fucking wait.
If there's a cliffhanger, I think it is going to be the arrival of a character who we mentioned in our preview episodes, who the voice actor has been in a few episodes already, but we know he's playing someone else.
Oh,
and it's someone that is brought into the comics later, but I think we're going to move that character up.
Does it start with a T?
No.
Oh, okay. Because I was thinking about the flaxen coat, the flaxen cape.
Oh, no. Okay, I don't think we're getting that character this season.
Okay. Oh, man.
No, it's a younger character.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
I think there'll be an arrival of... Oh, maybe. I mean, maybe that character who begins with T arrives, but I think there'll be...
You're talking about the character that begins with O.
Yeah. The other character who begins with O.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I feel it's really funny doing the show and catering to just watchers of the show. It just shows how much reverence we hold the comic and how we don't want to ruin anything for you guys.
We're dancing around so much.
I want to talk about Immortal so bad, but I won't do it because it's going to happen.
Yep.
If it doesn't happen this season... I'm going to mention it. I'm going to say it.
We're doing an extra episode. Like, that's guaranteed. We're going to do an extra episode at the end of the season that won't be for people who are only watching the show. It's going to be for book readers and people who have caught up, just so that we can go over the season and what changed, what didn't, and what we're expecting, what we're hoping for.
But if they don't mention Immortals, the thing I'm thinking about Immortal
backstory, yeah,
I gotta talk about it.
You gotta do it.
Just because of episode 3, when they're at Mount Rushmore, I have some thoughts about that.
It's so good, and I think what else this episode? Like, real quick, what have we missed out?
I have a second note.
Go for it.
Second note that I took, in Rick's. A dorm room.
Yeah.
On the wall is a hand turkey. Now, are you familiar with hand turkey?
I know of them, yeah.
Where you trace your hand and then you draw a turkey over it. Kids do it at, like, Thanksgiving
here. And stuff.
I know Ryan Otley likes to do a hand turkey every year on his Instagram. But I want to take a closer look at this hand turkey, because if you look at it, in the palm of the hand is a circle of the hand turkey. And each of the feathers on the index fingers are different colors. And I want to say they match up with Thanos' glove.
Amazing.
And so, I need to look at it again, but I think...
The hand turkey.
I think it's the Invincible taking the piss out of comics by saying, you know, this is the greatest comic book ever made. Thanos is... the equivalent of a hand turkey. Wait till you see what we have. You know what I mean? It's that sort of jabbing the Marvel universe
sort of thing that would have been in the background of the book.
So take a look at that. It's right by the door to the room that Amber's sleeping in.
And I'll check it out.
I mean, there's definitely a circle in the palm for the hand turkey. And I want to say that
it sounds so believable that I don't even need to. Like, I'm just like, yep, that's it. That's exactly what.
And
it's gonna
be. Guarantee you, it's something that probably Otley's done.
Yeah.
That got put in the show. Because what fucking college student would have a hand turkey drawing on their wall? Like, that's something a parent would put on their fridge until their kid turned 5 and they would take it down.
Yeah, absolutely.
So take a look at that. When I saw that, I was like, I need to write this down. I cannot forget to talk about this hand turkey.
Amazing. That's great. I missed it completely.
Yeah.
William finds out that Mark is invincible.
Yeah, but okay, so far I feel like it seems like William knew that Omni-Man was his dad. Am I wrong about that?
I think you're wrong about that.
Okay, but
I think he just thought his dad had got, like, into an accident or something beforehand.
There's a scene in the comic that plays out pretty similar to this, where William asks Invincible to take him flying.
Yeah.
And something happens in that scene where I'm like, that's not going in the show.
There's a line of dialogue.
Yeah.
It was a different
Here, I'll just say it. Mark is holding William in his arms like he's carrying a bride over a threshold.
Yeah.
It's kind of how he was holding
Titan.
But as they're flying, Mark says, this is so gay. Yeah. And I don't believe by the time we see that in the comics, we don't know that William's gay. And so I'm like,
William is dating Eve at the time.
Right. So I'm like, oh my gosh, is this gonna like, I'm like, how are they going to do this? Or what are they going to have him say? Cause whatever they have him say will now replace the word gay. And I'm like, that's bad. Like if he says this is lame, then you're saying
we're changing it up. Whereas they just skip over it completely.
In this version, again, better than the comic, Mark takes him out flying for like 2 seconds and brings him right back because Mark thinks it's
dumb
beneath him.
Yeah. And he's also desperately trying to save his relationship at the same time.
Right. And I love that Will still tries to blackmail him. I'm going to tell everyone that you're invincible if you don't take me flying.
Yeah.
But then, like,
he knows that he won't. Of course, he's not going to do that. It's his best friend. But he's going to hold that against him forever.
I love that he tries to double down and wear the costume.
Yeah.
And even Mark is like, no.
There's a line here, dude. Like, you can't do that. No, you're not doing that.
Wear the costume. Like, of all the things, like... Hey, can you lift this? Can you say, can you lift this table? Oh, can you do this thing? How fat? Like, can I wear the costume? It plays into the
character that he is in the show, though, so much. Where it's like, he just wants to try it on. Like, he's like, cool, I want to wear that.
Yeah. It's so good. Will's perfect.
He's done so well. All of the side characters have been improved exponentially.
Well, the thing is, it could have easily taken out. When you're talking, you have 8 episodes to do this story.
Yeah.
You could easily take out Amber. You could even make Debbie less of a character. You can make Will less of a character. Like he could be taken out completely. Kind of just gloss over high school. But the
you could
fact
just
that
have
leaving him all
like
in,
either Robot fill that role or like all of his like all of the other teen be the friends as well. Like Eve could serve both those roles.
Speaking of Robot, Black Samson is
he's
noticing
awake, he's
that
alive.
Robot has emotion.
Yep.
That scene was
and
great.
And we've got other robot drones as well.
Right.
When that one staggered in with the flower, that was such an Age of Ultron moment. Like it looked like the first time we see Ultron in that movie.
Right. And the flower reminded me of something, and I'm forgetting what it was.
Batman Begins?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. There's multiple robots.
Yeah.
And they all seem to be working on the same mind.
Yeah. We've got, like, Robot Prime has stayed by Monster Girl's side the whole time.
Right.
But their robot has also been out there doing other stuff. So that's the first time that we've had that confirmed, I think.
Yeah, I love the robot and Monster Girl relationship. Robot seems to be doing stuff, you know, everything he can to help her out.
Even some shady stuff, much like Cecil and like Damien Darkblood and stuff. It's like it's shades of gray. It's not good guy, bad guy. He is using bad guys for their superior knowledge in that thing.
And we've seen Nolan do that as well.
Uh-huh.
Cross the line, maybe, you know, a little too far. And so Mark's kind of nice.
Yeah,
to follow Mark's story to see it kind of sets up like where is he going
and like, will his opinion about his dad be affected by Cecil, by Robot, by all of these people doing shades of gray? Where is the line essentially, like how far can you go, how far to like the dark side essentially can you go to help the ones you love, to support what you want to do? But then are you gonna murder the Guardians of the Galaxy?
It's no, a fucking Guardians cartoon. It's crazy. Yeah. I love it. It's so good.
Hopes for next week. Let's wrap up with some hopes for next week's episode. The penultimate episode.
I mean, I'm thinking by the end, Mark finds out. Ooh, what if Debbie mentions it? We haven't had a scene with Debbie and Mark for a while. With just them one-on-one. I think since episode one.
I think Debbie might be going missing.
Oh, I don't like that. It's making me anxious.
The way that, I mean, that hole in the wall, he's either going to have to cover it up or, like, it's going to be noticeable. Like, if Mark comes home and sees a hole in the wall, he's going to know something's up.
Okay, so, and then with Immortal possibly coming back, that's the first eyewitness. Like, everybody's suspecting, and nobody's not gonna listen to Immortal, what Immortal has to say. That's gonna be good.
I think next week is gonna be, we're gonna get that sort of rise. Everything's gonna be going really well. Maybe Mark tells Amber next week. Right. Everything's going great, and then end of the episode, bombshell.
If he tells Amber and it's not the title card, I'm going to be very, very upset.
Invincible, yeah.
But knowing Kirkman, I feel like he's setting this up for that. Especially with the last week's episode, where he didn't tell her, and it felt like we were ready for that title screen. Yeah. I'm excited, dude. Only two more episodes.
It's crazy.
They better announce season two. They better announce season two.
I want it announced now. I want it announced yesterday, but it would have lined up so perfectly if, like, San Diego was happening in July as normal. Like, it would have lined up like, okay, we got a couple of months of chomping and waiting, but like, okay, but then that's happening in what, October this year.
So. I want the end of episode 8 to be like Book
season
of Boba
2, Fett. 2022.
Right.
Yeah.
2022. Do like the Matrix 2 thing, like Matrix Reloaded, where we've already been making season 2, and here's a little bit of what's coming.
And just show Alan the Alien doing something.
Yeah.
Because we haven't seen him since, like, and I don't know if we're going to again now this season.
Depending on what happens with Nolan.
Yeah. I'm going to save it because I think I know what the tease for the end of the season could be. I think it's going to be Alan and a few other characters, a character beginning with T, a character beginning with O, maybe. Like, and Alan going, oh, shit. Like, he's outmatched.
All right.
We'll see.
Oh. I'm by the way, I'm glad they're putting these out once a week.
Yeah.
It makes Friday so much more special.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Especially when Falcon and the Winter Soldier is just meh.
Oh, did you see this week's episode?
This week's was the best.
Yeah. I thought that was phenomenal. I think I don't even want to get it. I'm not going to start talking about that fucking shit.
I'm going to work.
Because I'm like, Falcon and Winter Soldier is a good show. I think it's really well done. But fucking, I'm not going to sit here and podcast about it. But just show me what's in the fucking box. Don't make me wait a week.
It's going to be a fancy costume, and it's going to be his
red, Captain white, America. And blue. Yeah.
Yeah, he's Captain America, but with wings.
That's going to be badass, but okay.
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Right. Cool. Until next week, where can people find us?
Invincipod.com. That'll give you links to everything, including our YouTube page. Subscribe to our YouTube page. I'm still posting links to other stuff, Invincible related, that's not just us. So you'll get some value out of it. And we're looking to get that 100 subscribers so we can get that vanity URL. That way I could just say, find us everywhere at Invincipod.
It'd be lovely if we could cut, like, on the YouTube feed, like, just do at, and then bang, Invincipod just comes up on the screen with blood splatter.
Right.
I'm giving you too much work today.
Right. Man, great episode.
So good.
Looking forward to next week. And that's cool. It.
Until next week, keep watching the sky.
Bye.